My name is Clint. I'm an alcoholic. I'd like to thank Clancy for asking me to speak tonight. I enjoyed the first speakers, Bob and Lindsay. I remember when Lindsay came around, that night over there was interesting. Nancy wouldn't even go near her. Harvey asked me if he ought to take her home. I said, yeah, I thought she still had the deed to that house. I did. If you're new here tonight, I welcome you to Alcoholics Anonymous. I welcome you to the Pacific Group. And I hope you find a home here. I know you will if you stick around. Somebody told me, and it's been a while now, they said, you can spend the rest of your life becoming the person you really want to be or defending who you are. You can spend the rest of your life becoming the person you really want to be or defending who you are. And that has been an interesting journey because some days I have made the effort to become the person that I really want to be, and some days I have defended who I am. And it's interesting because I almost inherent in the idea of becoming who you really want to be is the idea of growth. And I have managed on some occasions to defend who I am and call it growth, which is pretty colorful. I mean, it's sort of like, and I think in a way that growth has to do more with stuff we don't want to do, maybe. Unfamiliar turns, taking a chance in an area. It seems to me tonight that it almost has nothing to do with what I propose to do. If I sit down and say, well, I think this month I'll grow intellectually. Whatever happens usually isn't growth, you know. I think I'll grow spiritually. It's driving to Bakersfield when you don't want to drive up there that it results in a spiritual growth, and you don't even think of it that way when you're doing it. And so becoming who I really want to be is not always a process that I'm in touch with. When I got to Alcoholics Anonymous, I didn't have that option. If there's anything I've obtained in Alcoholics Anonymous, it's choice. I have obtained a choice here. You have given me a choice. When I got to Alcoholics Anonymous, I did not have a choice. In those days, I lived in Glendale, and I was living in a garage with three other guys. And I was dying in that garage with those three other guys. And sneaking in and out of there late, and it was a double garage, and still, you know, it didn't have the kind of feel to it that I always thought I wanted. And I had it was cut up into four little rooms. And we each had a little room. I had one that was about 8 by 10 or 8 by 11. And male alcoholics, I've been in them sober too, when you sent me on 12-step calls, and they look about the same as they did then. They've got a little bulb coming out of the ceiling on a string. There's a little cot. There's a linoleum floor that's sticky from spilled wine or vomit or whatever. You can hear yourself walking across that floor, your feet. There's an odor in there. The odor of the pungency of mattress has gone bad. And that's where I lived. And that's where I died. And that's there's one more thing. I really hate to not mention this. We all have, we don't like to give up our social life easily. Male alcoholics. So there's usually in most of those rooms, there's an old copy of Playboy magazine laying around in there. Sort of like, honey, I'm home, right? Or just, and the frightening thing of it is that it had become familiar to me, as had waking up in a Glendale drunk tank, as had getting arrested, as had wanting a jury trial, because I want justice. I got arrested one morning at 10 a.m. for drunk driving. The cop that put me in the car surprised me because I thought I was touching my nose so well for him. And on the police report I saw a few weeks later, he said that he had discontinued the field sobriety test because the suspect was injuring himself. And I want a jury trial, right? I grew up in a home where we went to church a lot. We talked about God all the time, all the time. And I tried to go for it, and then I couldn't go for it, and then I tried to go for it, and then I couldn't go for it. And finally, when I found out that it made my mother happy, I was already at the point where I didn't want to make her happy, and that was the end of it. She wanted me to be an evangelist. And I knew there was nothing, anything like that, what they did that I wanted to be. Nothing at all. Nothing. I did not want to stand around on street corners in Billings, Montana and pass out religious tracts. I didn't want to do any of that stuff. I had an uncle that was a missionary. I didn't want to do that work. I didn't know what I wanted to do, but it was none of those things. Mainly, I couldn't even look at it because I was mad at my mother already. And if she liked it, I didn't. And it's sort of like that, you know, we make our choices in an odd way, whatever they want. We want the opposite. And as my sponsor said a few times, we call that freedom. But we always have to wait until they decide what they want so we can do the other. I never did. It's interesting. When I got to Alcoholics Anonymous, I based myself, because you were going to say one day, you're alcoholic, or are you an alcoholic, and you never did. I was asked an interesting question fairly early. They said, are you powerless over alcohol? The reason I was based for the other question is because I have a lot of definitions of alcoholic. None of them include me. Alcoholic is the guy in the next cell. Alcoholic is the guy that doesn't have a place to stay. I got a garage. Alcoholic doesn't have a job. I was selling encyclopedias door to door. I got a career. And so I knew how to handle that question. But when you said, are you powerless over alcohol, there really isn't much quibbling about what alcohol is. And powerless, somehow you just get it in your gut. You just sort of know. Powerless is about when they say, get in the car. You get in the car. You may drag a bit the first time or two, but you get in. The only real question is whether you're going to get in with a big lump here or just get in. When they say, put your hands behind your back, that's what you do. Get in the cell, that's what you do. Powerless. You're totally under the control and at the whim of another human being that you don't even know. powerless is when they take your hand and say, "Here, just relax, we'll do it." And during the finger-putting process, you can't even quite get that. You know? So I knew about powerless, and I knew about alcohol. And the question, are you powerless over alcohol, is an interesting one. And if you tonight are wondering if you belong here, let me ask you this. Does powerlessness and alcohol come together in your life? Can you have alcohol in your life without powerlessness? So I know you don't get drunk every time. I know there was that night in 81. But I mean, in the main, does it happen that way? If it does, you may belong here. I didn't think I belonged here, and I certainly didn't think I would stay here. A bail bondsman took me to my first meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous. A bail bondsman took me over to that club in Glendale. It was on Central Avenue in those days. And the man literally saved my life. I had no idea there was a group of people like you. None. I had no idea. It wasn't the last time I drank. I drank again after going to a few meetings, and it was 5 weeks later that I had my last drink on the 14th of August, 1966. And it was 2 years after that that I moved out here to the west end of town and began circling a group of people that called themselves the Pacific Group, eyeing them from a distance, getting a little closer and getting a little closer. And the bulk of my sobriety, the most memorable of my sobriety has been right here with you. And the enormity of what's happened, you know, it's very transforming, this experience in Alcoholics Anonymous. I am nothing like that person that I was when I got here in 1966. Nothing at all. And that is as it must be, I think, because that person that got here in 1966 was just a drunk and would surely drink again. And that I have not had a drink in 22 years is as eloquent evidence as I know that I'm not that same person anymore. I'm simply not. And what has transformed me are the steps of Alcoholics Anonymous and the fellowship of Alcoholics Anonymous. And it's almost like the fellowship sustains me long enough that I'm willing to do the steps. And I took forever to do the steps and still survived. And it's so interesting that the last 3 or 4 years of my sobriety have been a time that I have come to respect this program and love these steps and appreciate a sponsor in my life more than any other time in my sobriety. Just recently, have I had a real awareness of what these steps will do for us. And twice this year, I have had people that I sponsor, one on each occasion, show up at my door with their fourth step in their hand. Early in their sobriety, I'm talking about 6 weeks, 90 days max. 9 o'clock, my house, with your inventory, and they show up. And we start at step one. And do two, and do three, and they've done four, and we do five, and six, and seven, and eight. And by the time I let them go that night, it was dark, and step nine was just about halfway done, and we'd made an arrangement to meet in a couple of weeks to see how the rest of it went. I mean, the letters had been written, and the phone calls had been made, and what couldn't be done that day. And it happened in a day. One of the guys is sitting in this room tonight. Seems to be none the worse for wear. And I took forever to do that. And I, you know, it's almost like you want to set a hook to get somebody you really love involved in Alcoholics Anonymous. And sometimes the hook is the activity in the group. And you put them on the AA merry-go-round and you wave at them as they come around every, you know. Whoops, there he goes. Yo. Call me in the morning. And that's great in this group. But there's another way to set the hook, too, and that's just insist that he said, because the person that left my house that day on both occasions was not the same person that had gotten there. Different. Transforming. Life-altering. Moving in another direction because of the steps of Alcoholics Anonymous. Now, did I do them like that? Hell no. I dragged my feet. It was 12 years before I got all the money paid back. Before I finally got that father-in-law paid back that $14,000 that I owed him. Before I finally, he sent me a nice little note. It wasn't nice enough, but it was okay. And I wrote the last letter to the last guy on the list. I burned up his couch when I was in dental school years ago. God, he was mad about his couch. So I wrote him a letter and I sent him a check. Sorry about the couch. I'm sober in AA. Here's your money. And he wrote me back right away. Nice, wonderful letter. He loved it that I was sober, loved it that I was alive and doing okay. Sent me back the check and said, donate it to AA. Maybe someday I will. I might. I might. Twelve years. My income went up right after that. It's interesting, isn't it? You want a raise? Make your amends. It's really what it amounts to. It's really true. I talked around a little bit, and I talk about these steps and how they'll change your life, and somebody after the meeting will call me, and you know, the question, they ask about 7 or 8 questions, but the question under the questions is, I know, but really, how did you do it? They know it's not really the steps. And you know what? It really is the steps. It's as simple and as drastic as all of that. I got a chance to go back to school after I got here. I was sober 5 years, selling carpets, sniveling about it, didn't like it much. A friend of mine, a guy I didn't see very often, showed up in the backyard one day on Saturday morning, and he and I got in this conversation, and he said, you ought to go to law school. And I never had thought about that. And he made me promise him that I would look into it. And I did. And I talked to my sponsor about it. And I found out it takes 4 years. And I remember saying, do you know how old I'll be in 4 years if I go to law school? And that marvelous answer came back, how old will you be in 4 years if you don't go to law school? Well, let's see. Carry the one. I was 34. I was 5 years sober. I started law school at night, worked during the day, went to meetings. Sponsored people. And the days go by. AA comes first, and then whatever else happened. And 4 years did go by, and I graduated from law school, and I sat down and took the bar examination for 3 days in the summer of 1975. After filling out that awful application that they want you to fill out, Jesus, that is a drag. Where have you lived since you were 16 years old? My study buddy had 2 addresses for that whole span of time. I've got columns of addresses. 2 weeks here, a month there. The Pontiac. garage, you know. You know, about all the arrests, all the divorces, all of that. I called up Clancy. I said, you know, there's an arrest down in Orange County. I don't know why, but it's not on the rap sheet. They'll never find out about it. I don't even know if he remembers this conversation, but I remember it very well. He said, yeah. I said, well, I don't want to put it down there. I mean, I don't look real hot on paper as it is, and... He said, oh, they just want the ones you want to put down there? Is that it? I said, yeah. He said, I'll tell you what, you don't have to put it down there if you don't want it, but you won't pass the bar exam if you don't. Oh, what are we into, some kind of karma routine? I thought that, I didn't say that. I don't talk that way to my sponsor. He said, the way it is like this. You're going to put down 90% of that stuff, and you will know way down deep where you really live that they'll catch you even if you do pass the bar exam. And you know what your reaction to that knowledge is going to be? You won't study for the bar exam. You'll figure, what the hell's the use? And I knew he was right. But he said, on the other hand, if you put it all down there, they may not let you take it, but if they do, you won't have that impediment. I mean, it was sort of like, it really is a practical way to go, just to do it the way AA tells you to do that. And I knew he was right, and I put it all down there. Susie and I were working together at that time, and I remember she and I had several discussions about that. And they let me take the test. And I put my pencil down at the end of the third day and went to an AA meeting and waited 4 months after that to find out if I had passed or failed, and 13 years ago, Thanksgiving, 13 years and 2 weeks ago, on Thanksgiving Eve in 1975, I got a call from a guy that I sponsored that worked at the Herald Examiner, and he said my name is on the list. What list is that, son? But I passed the bar exam. I remember Chuck and Susie came over that night. Wild time. And I've been doing that and loving it, loving it, loving it. I love my job. I have a secret weapon that you have taught me. In trial, I do something that they never expect. I stay squeaky clean with the jury. I let the other lawyers step in it. And after 6, 7, 8, 9, 10 days of trial, the jury usually will come back for me if they have any reason at all. They expect the lawyers to lie to them in there. And I don't do that. And they get it after a few days. And I learned that from you. And it's a very practical way to do this thing. And so I love it here. I love it here with you. It seems to me that there isn't any area of my life that hasn't been magnificently altered. When I got to Alcoholics Anonymous, I had some really wonderful notions about women. Like, I don't trust them. They'll hurt me. I'm afraid of them. I made that decision when I was 7 years old. You can't trust them. Can't please them. No figuring them out. With all the impeccable logic of a 7-year-old, I decided you can't do that. And I never examined those notions again. And you can imagine the colorful arrangements I went into with women. Married 4 times, twice drunk, twice sober. With that idea, up until 3 or 4 years ago, that they were all out to get me. And I noticed, after spending some time talking to a friend of mine in Orange County one night, that there was one common thread through all of those marriages. Me. Jesus, I didn't want to get that. And this guy said to me, a member of AA, and a good friend of mine named Tom, and Tom said to me, he said, would you like to knock that crap off? I told him what had happened. He said, what happened to this one? I said, she just couldn't be intimate. And he said, who can't be intimate? I said, her. He said, how many times have you been married? You're going to lay this at third door? Come on. And he said, you want to do something about that? I said, you know what? I said, I don't know. And he said, well, who should we ask? And I said, shut up. I'm sober longer than you are, you little bastard. But it's an interesting thing. It's really an interesting thing. Because this program allows me to look at myself. This program gives me an enormous amount of freedom to take a look at who I am. That inventory, that step four, you know what we're really inventorying, I think, tonight? I think we're inventorying the contents of our mind. I think I'm just looking at what drives me. And sometimes when I'm so full of crap and have these, you know, when they say when you give up your old ideas, give them up. Give up your old ideas. And I don't know what they mean by that. Because when you're carrying around a notion and have been forever, it doesn't seem like your idea. It seems like just the way that it is in life. Women are untrustworthy. Nothing complicated about it. I didn't know that it was an idea that I had that other people really didn't have. I didn't know it was a notion that I picked up that was invalid, that stood in the way of me having any kind of a decent relationship with somebody else. I didn't know I scanned for that, but I brought that thinking with me everywhere I went. And along with that was some objections, of course. And objections can make things a little bit tough. I have an objection to doing it your way. I have an objection to being a faithful husband. I have an objection to leaning on them, to sharing, to asking for help. But then, I had an objection to living sober when I got here. And so I had to drink. It's interesting, isn't it, that the difficulty lies in the objection. One day, as has happened to every one of us in the room, I dropped my objection to living sober. And somehow or other, since the 14th of August, 1966, it hasn't been that tough. In fact, it's been a piece of cake. It's been easy. Easier than drinking every day, by far. And all that happened, really, was you gave me a choice and you gave me some permission to drop the objection to living sober. Drop the objection because I had an objection. I'm not going to do it that way. I won't do it that way. And other objections came along. I have an objection to being a student. I've been a student all my life. And one day I dropped my objection to being a student and I was able to go back to school. And one day I dropped my objection to trusting women. And it comes up, you know. It's not gone. But relationships are much easier now, much healthier. I'm much more willing. See, one of the things that we discover here, I think, is our own code of conduct. And if we're not living that way, it's hard to get around it. It doesn't matter much what you think your rules are. If you're not living within them, you're not going first class. And I know I've done it all, tried it about every way that you can try. And so I come back 22 years and some months later tonight with you and think about that night I got to AA and think about 13 years and 2 weeks ago when Chuck and Susie were at the house. when I found out I'd passed the bar. Think about a few weeks ago when I wept as Byron and Marion sang that song, Jesus. I just, I couldn't be in a rehearsal and not weep as they memorialized that 20 years of a marriage, of a day at a time, and know with everything in me that I could rejoice in that with them, because I know that's possible for us all. Because I know that they too, they had their days when they wanted to go and they didn't do that. They had their days when they had objections to it and they didn't leave. And we've all had our days when we've objected to doing it their way, when we've objected to the steps, when we've objected to sobriety, and yet we drop our objections because we know ultimately that this is the only place that we can really be free. And so I'm so delighted to be here with you, and thank you.